You are back with Green Left Radio on 3CR, and we are really pleased to be joined by Paul Gregoire. Paul is a Sydney-based anti-prison activist and writer for Sydney Criminal Lawyers, who has also contributed to Green Left. Paul's on the line now to discuss Peter Dutton's appointment as the Liberal Party leader and also a bit about Dutton's record in building the surveillance state. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Thanks for having me, Chloe.
Paul, how do you feel about Dutton's Peter Dutton's appointment as the leader of the opposition?
Well, I would say it wasn't that much of a surprise because he seemed to be the last one standing out of the small group of Liberal members likely to be the future leader. But it's still a shock to see such a divisive character take on the lead role. It's disappointing because it places an arch-conservative political viewpoint in a key influential position in the parliament, which will serve as a drag on lawmaking and policy in that direction. And his being appointed uncontested also means that within the Liberals, no other politician within its ranks in federal parliament felt that strongly enough to bring a more moderate point of view to the fore.
Can you talk a bit about Dutton's track record and his various portfolios as Minister for Immigration, Home Affairs and Defence, like his human rights records, his positions on refugees and First Nations people and that sort of thing?
Sure. I'll just stick to his first position. Dutton's been in Parliament for two decades, but he didn't really become this prominent figure until he took on the role of Immigration Minister, which is what I'll stick to in reference to this question. But from that time on that he took on the role of Immigration Minister, he's been in the public ear making statements that play on voter fears of the other. And this other is always a foreigner and a person of colour. So Dutton took over the immigration portfolio at the height of when the offshore refugee and asylum seeker prison system was operating. And he was tough on his treatment of refugees and he was determined to keep them offshore. And while he was being tough on the refugees, he was priming the media with derogatory statements and scandals to curry public support for this position. He brought up positions where he stated that women on Nauru were pretending to be raped so they could get to Australia to have an abortion, that asylum seekers were all illiterate and couldn't count and would take on Australian jobs. And he also lamented the fact that Lebanese people were allowed to immigrate to Australia in the 1970s. He said that might have been a mistake. In early 2018, he warned that Melbourne was too afraid to go out to dinner because of a non-existing African gang crisis. And a few months later, he announced that he'd found the perfect refugee for our nation to take in, and that was persecuted white South African farmers. So at this point, Dutton really came to the fore as a divisive character, and that was effective in terms of carrying the conservative vote.
Yeah, and it's worth mentioning briefly that the issue of white South African farmers was very much motivated by the kind of US far-right conspiracism kind of angle that there was a lot of stuff going on at the time around there. But the next question is, from your article, Return of Dutton, the Coalition Strikes Back with the Arch Conservative, which is on sydneycriminallawyers.com.au, you say newly appointed Home Affairs Minister can certainly look across the chamber and note a glint in Dutton's eye that says, the harsher the laws, the better, mate. We'll pass him through. Is the danger of having someone like Dutton heading up this kind of ultra-conservative coalition, is the danger of that it will not at all motivate the ALP to do anything progressive at all? Like, if they know that they can get these conservative measures passed through, will that motivate them to push for more conservative measures, do you think?
Well, the major issue with having him front up the coalition in opposition at the moment, because we've had this perfect situation with the vote, or near the perfect, whereby there was that great shift away from the two major parties. Mm. And we've seen a large progressive crossbench made up of Greens and Teal members. These members want to push Labor towards more realistic climate action, as well as the establishment of a federal anti-corruption watchdog that actually has teeth. And so if Labor's looking to pass laws that aren't conservative enough for the coalition opposition, then he has that support with the progressive forces. But in return, if Labor's looking to curb the greater push for climate action, which is very likely to happen, or if they're looking to water down their model of an ICAC, this will be much easier to do if they just have to look across at Conservative Peter Dutton on the other side of the chamber, who's wanting to see the same outcome as them.
Hmm. Yeah, thanks, Paul. There is a Green Left article written by your colleague, Uga Nadim, from Sydney Criminal Lawyers, called Dutton's Record, Building the Surveillance State. And we just wanted to draw from that article because he talks about how Dutton was part of forming and supporting privacy-eroding laws. And some of these laws are just, you know, I mean, like you don't even have to be suspected of an offence for authorities to do things like access and monitor you for at least 2 years of a range of your personal data. And yeah, if people want to read through that article, it's actually quite frightening, the kind of laws that Dutton helped form. And he writes that the need to protect people against terrorists has been used to justify many laws which have turned Australia into a country which has the most pervasive surveillance laws of any Western democracy. So, Paul, how likely is it that these laws will be actually enacted, and how will it affect, like, how will these laws affect ordinary people?
Well, there's been a proliferation of these national security and counterterrorism laws passed at the federal level. These laws have, for the most part, been justified on the terror threat, and this has been a bipartisan project. So it's been Labor and Coalition have both been in agreement with these laws. When these laws are put on the table, they're then sent to the Parliamentary Joint Committee on Intelligence and Security to review them and amend them, and that's made up of Liberal, Labor and Nationals members who then debate how the laws will be best applied, and then they're just passed through. So these are the sort of the laws that eat away at the rights of all of us, such as the right to privacy. And at the federal level, they've passed about 94 bills over the last two decades since the New York attacks. So this is something we can expect to keep happening under Labor, and Peter Dutton will be quite happy to see his work, his earlier work, being built upon. And that's why people are calling for a Human Rights Act or a Bill of Rights to be established at the federal level in Australia, because Australia continues to be the only Western liberal democracy without a Bill of Rights or a Human Rights Act. And that would enshrine our rights in a variety of rights that you see in the international mechanisms and treaties. In federal law, and these sort of laws would then have to be weighed up against these rights that are enshrined in law so that they don't clash with citizens' rights or liberties. And there could even be a winding back of these sort of laws if we had such a bill.
Thanks, Paul. This is it's quite concerning, and yeah, we should have a bill. I think it's a bill. Is it a Bill of Rights? What's it called?
Yeah. Or a Human Rights Act.
Human Rights Act. Yeah, and we should.
There's lots of places are pushing for it, like the Civil Liberties Australia and the Human Rights Law Centre in Melbourne are all pushing for this sort of bill to be established.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we definitely need to get behind campaigns to support that.
Yeah, and in the meantime, listeners can look up free VPNs. It's not illegal to use them, and they hide your traffic from your internet service provider, which the government is compelling to provide with your personal information. Just by the way.
Good tip. Paul, just a bit of a silly question to wrap things up, and if you wanted to have any last comments before we wrap up the interview, but, you know, Dutton has, you know, he did take the evil immigration minister to a whole new level, and we've seen lots of social media circulating the photo of his face covered by dark shadows, you know, that he actually tried to ban. And, you know, there's been so many anti-Dutton campaigns and memes circulated that parody him as this evil, power-craving pop like culture figures like Darth Vader or Voldemort. Even in your article, you know, it's like the return of the Dutton, the Coalition Strikes Back. It's like, you know, the Empire Strikes Back, and you can see stormtroopers in the background. And, you know, he's trying to, his campaign office is trying to, like, well, you know, they're trying to soften his image, and we just wanted to know, you know, do how hard is that going to be? Is he going to, do you think he'll have any success in softening his image after all he's done?
Well, I think it's quite hilarious to think that he can just stand there with his family and his teenage, with his wife and teenage kids, and somehow that'll wipe away his whole nasty political record. I also think it's quite amusing that he fits the role of arch-villain so well. Because, you know, in that picture where he's dark shadowed, not everyone would cast that aura, and nor do all politicians suit the comparison with an arch villain. So Morrison was a lot of things, but he was no Darth Vader.
Yeah.
And yeah. And just for that one last thing,
yeah.
I understand that the 3CR Community Radio is having a radiothon.
Yes, we
and
are.
And I'd encourage listeners to contribute, because Melbourne's very lucky to have 3CR with the array of political and social programs that you have on it. We've got nothing like it in Sydney. We have some good community radio, but nothing to compare with 3CR.
Exactly.
So I'd encourage listeners to donate to keep shows like Green Left Radio on the air.
Well, we appreciate the support there.
Yeah, and if listeners want to hear interviews like this with, you know, people like Paul, then, yeah, please donate to 3CR. We are having our radiothon starting next week, but you can donate now. You know, you can do it through a new, you know, to keep the keep community radio community strong radiothon. You can go to www.3cr.com.au/donate, and you can nominate Green Left if you'd like, or, you know, there's lots of other shows as well that you can also donate, and, you know, you can even split your money, your donation, across different shows, or you can donate by phone by calling 9419 8377, and that's Monday to Friday 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can pay by credit card, or you can drop in to the station in person at 21 Smith Street, Fitzroy, during business hours. And thank you, Paul, for that plug. And and we'll love to have you back on the show another time. But we're gonna let you go and get on to a community announcement.
Thanks very much, Paul.